Morning, Rabbosai. Welcome to another week of Torah Way. We were learning, based on what we've been learning the last few days, I want to ask you a question. Take a teenage girl, right? She's in school and she's got detention. Yeah, so, and her father wants to light menorah at whatever this month is, 10 to 5 or whatever it is. And she's not home yet. When a girl attends the family lighting, it's pshat that my father is lighting menorah and I would like to be there. Is that the vote? And I'm sorry I missed it. And it would have been so nice if I could have been there and we sing Moed Tzur together and then we have latkes. Yeah, is that the kavona behind her presence at the menorah? Ooh. Or is it that I am the chuyev in Hadlokas Haneirois, right? We take on, if it would be Ner Ish or Beisoy, that one person was lighting one candle, and that candle was there for the whole family, then obviously the father is being moitzi everybody. Or in fact, he's not even moitzi anybody, he's lighting for the household. But now we take on that first of all we go Mahadrin, which is Ner Lechol Echod Ve'echod, and then we go another stage that we light 1 to 8. In other words, it's not just a Ner Lechol Echod Ve'echod, it's a Menoyer Lechol Echod Ve'echod. And then we go a further stage, which is that each person lights their own menorah, rather than the Balabais lighting 10 menorahs like the Rambam says. So in that case, what's happening is, and we learnt it, the Gemara says so in the Daf Chof Gimel Amud Aleph, the women are as mechuyev in Hadlokas HaMenorah as the men. And therefore what's really happening is that I need to be, if I'm the girl and I'm stuck, I can't get home in time for menorah, whatever it is, I need to be there in order that my father should be moitzi me with my mitzvah of Hadlokas HaMenorah. It's not just that I'm an onlooker and I'd like to be there for the family lighting, or I'd like to be there while my father's lighting. We said the boys are lighting Mishum Chinuch. Okay, so the boys light their own menorahs, and otherwise the father lights. But when the father lights, he's being moiti, everybody. When the father lights, he's being moiti his wife, or they say Yishukagufoi, but he's being moiti his wife, he's being moiti the other adults in the household. And they have to, in theory, they have to be there in order to have kavona. What happens if she missed the lighting? And she comes home and her father's already lit and all the menorahs are out and she only gets home at 7 o'clock. What does she do then? Yeah, pashtus, there are many, many poskim say she lights a menorah, she makes a bracha. She's mechuyev to light. A woman who lives on her own, yeah, she lights a menorah, she makes a bracha because she's as mechuyev as the men. Afein hoye boisan nes, it's a mitzvah de rabbonon, and therefore the women light menorah like the men light menorah. And therefore lady on her own.
Father can't do it in her absence?
No. Can you be moitzi me with a bracha if I'm not here?
That's a question.
Oh, you can't. I can't come later on and eat the apple because you missed a Boripi waits for me. Okay, it's Bichzanenin. Yeah, I can't shake Luluf, let's say. Yeah, later on, don't make a brocha because you made a brocha for me half an hour earlier. Yeah, so Pashtus, according to Rav Poskim, when she comes home at 7 o'clock and she's missed Hadlokas Haneros in the of the family, yeah, and Bifrat they say that Bizman Azeh, when there is an intention to light, when everybody has an intention to light on their own, it's kilo they don't want to be yoitzer with the, they've got kavona negdis, they've got kavona lehepech, that they're not yoitzer with the balabos. Right? If she's not there, she's not yoitzer with her father's menorah. She has a chiyuv to light. She'll light her own menorah, she'll make a brocha. Pashtus. So I mean, the time will maybe come from one way or another.
Fasad is much more complicated. So on Shabbos, though, in many cases, you can be somewhere else tonight for your household. So it's not as pashut as you said, but you're right. For Ashkenazim, everyone's got their own view.
Yeah.
Start of the Torah Way in Northwest London, Sunday, Yud Cheshvan, 30th November, Dayan Mordechai Nissim Shlita, Kashrus of Tfilin Batim. This week's Torah is sponsored by Family Posen in honor of the engagement of their daughter, Gila Posen Stichia, to Neria Chaim. Baturov Nerayoa, he rotten shim the bias the mom be so lashem lisilo, also the Ilanishmas, our founder, Rabbi Yosef Dov Ben, Rabbi Shimon Michal, Svi Itzkovitz, Zachron Ole Rocho.
Good luck to everyone. And today, Ritz Hashem, we'd like to discuss some aspects of tefillin, but in particular, batim. So people who are listening, who can't see this, but I've got a pair of tefillin over here, which is Sheliad tefillin. I'm going to explain why I brought them with and why it's so important. Today's shiur in understanding our own, the kashrus of our own tefillin. So we can't deal with all aspects of the Torah, but as I'm sure you know, we've started a Lishka, which is myself, Diane Kahn, and Rabbi Zinger, Abdullah Zinger, who is a world expert on Tefillin, all aspects of Tefillin for maybe four decades, to try and bring up the standards of kashrus for Tefillin generally in England. And one of the things that I want to speak about today is something that probably most people will not know about, just because it's an area of halacha which people don't generally study, and it's very intricate. And the reason why I wanted to talk about this today is from all the different aspects that we've been working with in the last couple of years, there's this particular area often means that we're buying tefillin which might be the most mehuda tefillin that we think we're buying. We could be spending £1,500 on them, which is generally what mehuda tefillin would cost today, good Ashkenazi tefillin. And they're actually not even a chachila de b'lievet because of this one aspect that we're going to speak about today. Because even those that allow it, what we're going to talk about, right, there's no mystery, but just hold them to the edge of your chairs. Even those that allow it, are, like Rav Vosner we're going to see, is the main posik that we're relying on, only allow it b'dievet. So you could be going into a shop, spending a lot of money on tefillin, £1,500 upwards, and come back, and actually what you've got is a pair of tefillin which is only b'dievet. Right, and that's really why I wanted to talk about this, because it's so important. So the question is like this. This is a pair of tefillin. This particular one is the more cheaper type of tefillin because they're called pshutot, because they're made, it's like paper mache. Not paper mache, what's it called? Origami. When you take papers and you cut them into different shapes, and you put them all together and they use glue to put it together, and you end up having one piece of leather that's really glued together in a certain place, and really the poskim allowed it. It's not that, even the Mishnah Berurah allowed it in his time. But the problem is that it's so fragile that if one part detaches from the other part, it doesn't remain kosher. So that's, and this is made with parchment, it's not made with cowhide, so it's a much cheaper pet. These are generally available, and we also did a batch where we, you know, through the Poskeador, for people who can't afford, for people, you know, who just about keeping mitzvahs. So it's a good thing to use these tefillin, but obviously it's not like these tefillin, which is, this is Rav Vosner's grandson, Batim Yerushalayim. I mean, you can't compare it to this type of tefillin. You know, this is cowhide, it's one piece of leather, so this is a very high standard, Eide Haredi Hechsher, who was asking me on the way in. It's a whole different type of tefillin, even to open it is so difficult. Now what I'm going to talk about today, is if you look at a tefillin shel yad over here, this is the bayit, right? The bayis, right? Now we can see that in the olden days, even in the Rishonim, some Rishonim hold that there was no thickness to the bayit. So it was just two pieces of leather, and they didn't use cowhide 100 and something years ago, because they didn't have machines that could be, through pressure, could work with the leather. So they used behemoth dakas, which are like sheep and goat and things like that. So the leather was very thin, and they would just sew it like that. And sometimes it didn't even have an area that was wider, which we call the titura. Didn't have that. So this gemita, this is the main tower of the tefillin, the bayit. And then there's the titura. Now, in order to have the tefillin like we have today, so we put something called a fitum, which is an extra part, which we put in there to give it height, and then the strap could go nicely inside. Now this fitum is a whole separate piece of leather. In fact, in the 1980s, I remember when I was growing up as a child, they were using shoe leather for this, and there was a whole controversy about it, and the whole kashrus of it was taken away at one point. Is this fitum, in this case, it's a separate piece of leather, but if we go back to this case, it's actually all one piece. It's all considered one piece of leather, right, of all. Is the titura, the wider side, considered to be part of the bayit? And it makes a very big difference, because if we're talking about the parashas going into the bayit, and it has to be only in the upper area, now these parashas are good because they're only about 32 millimeters, which means usually they're higher. But if this titura is not called a bayit and it falls into this area over here, right, it might not be kosher. It has to go all the way in. Right? So that's the question we're talking about today. Does the parashas have to go all the way into the bayit above the titura? Now this is called the titura eliona, this is called titura tachtoina. Some say the titura eliona is part of the bayit. Okay? But generally, most poskim say it's not. Okay? And those who say that if some of the parsha was in the titura eliona, it will only be b'di'evet, and that's Rav Ozna. Okay? So I'm going to go through the whole understanding. So the Ben Ish Chai, I'm Sephardi, so I'm going to quote the Ben Ish Chai, wrote a sefer called Rav Bracho, a very early sefer of his, and he spends many pages discussing this question. And he writes, his grandfather would say that if the parsha did not go entirely into the bayit, it's pasul. That they didn't have these type of tefillin, they had these type of tefillin, so you can understand that this being a separate piece is really not part of the bayit. So it could be he was only talking in that situation, which is one of the heterion why people make it in this, right? So this is, he would say it has to be in the whole bayit like that. Yeah? And he quotes his Rav Eliyahu Mani, who was a great posek, lived in Hebron, but came from Baghdad as well, who quotes the Shlo HaKadosh. It's very clear in the Shlo HaKadosh's writings that you shouldn't do this, and he's Koy Tagar. He argues, he says, it's not acceptable that the Sofrim are doing this, that they're allowing that the Parsha should not go entirely into the Bayit. And he makes a very hoo-ha, but he doesn't use the word pasul. We don't like to use a pasul in Halakha, but we say it's not kosher. But he doesn't turn around and say that they're not usable. He just says you shouldn't do it.
It's a bit wider, so that...
So the problem is, Sofrim like to have as much parchment as they can so that they can have more space to write. And their writing will be better. So general parshas which we buy today are 34. I'm talking about a standard pair of tefillin, not extra small ones or anything like that. Just buy a regular pair of tefillin, there'll be, the Sofrim will try and use 34. This one's 30, 31, 32, so it's, that's why it's a bit smaller, so I can show you that it goes inside. But I struggle with this a lot. A lot of, when we're putting the parshas inside, for our Sofrim as well that we've trained, right, it's a problem. Like this particular buy, I bought from Batim Yerushalayim, which is a great place to buy. It's Rav Ozna's grandson. It's in number one, Rehov Sonnenfeld, and next to me. It's a great place to buy from. Very high standards, right? But if I don't ask specially for Batim that have this height, right, so they come out where there's no space inside. So in this particular buy, I myself took a bench press, you know, and a router, and I was trying to filed inside a little bit more to get it out, and look what I did. My router went too far, and it pushed it out. So you can see, for those who are listening, on the top of the bayit, we've got this little sort of round area that's jetting out. Now, this could still be kosher, but I could never give this to somebody and send it to them and say, look, it's like a regular bayit. So him being a mensch just swapped it and gave me another one. So I can use it as a demonstration. But it's so easy if you're drilling inside and you're not when they're making the tefillin themselves and we've now got a hold of it. People won't do that. They haven't got time for that. They just put the parsha in and it's sticking into the tefillin and it could be a problem. So Ben Ish Chai goes into the shalom. Question.
How do you prevent it from dropping?
How do you keep it up? First of all, it doesn't go straight in like that. There's something called a matlis, which is another parchment goes around it. And there have to be hairs around which have to come from the egel, from the tail of the egel. And by the time it goes in, we then have an area that sticks out a bit more, and we bend it, and we hold it in. There are some who put ritzur, a piece of ritzur leather, to hold it down between. But we don't use ritzur leather because this is not ritzur leather, that's a different type of leather. And when we put this in like this, usually there's enough of the other parchment that we bend over like a Z, and it holds it up. But Ena Chanami, you're absolutely right. If you don't have a mechanism of keeping it up, and you're going on planes and going in cars as you're bouncing up and down all over the place, you know, trekking around with your tefillin bag, so it could be it will fall down. And sometimes we open it up and it has fallen down. So then we're relying only on the opinion again. It'll only be bidyavid at best. It'll never be lechachila or mehuda. Right? So going into the shy, that's far more detailed than just that. So we can spend a little bit of time and see how far poskim go to try and work this out. So the Ben Ish Chai says, do we say a concept in halacha which is called ruvo kekulo? That we say that the majority of something makes it like it's everything. Right? So for example, if you remember, we just went through Sukkos recently, and it's machlokis in the Mishnah between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The person is ruvo, gufo, right, in the sukkah, but some of them is still outside. How much do you need of a person to be inside the sukkah for it to be that you're sitting, you're mekayem the mitzvah of teishvu b'sukkah, b'sukkah teishvu shivat yamim, right? So, some say just the table, without the table, but you see there's a concept really that's spoken there, rosho v'gufo, right? So it's either of rubo kekulo. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay? So, the Ben Ish Chai starts citing halachas which are in the Beis HaMikdash. There's certain parts of the Beis HaMikdash where if a person had most of their body, it will be cooler in that part, but there's other parts which are not. Right, and it's a Gemara in Zvachim, Daf Chafa Vav Amud Aleph, that it says in the Kodshim Kodshim, in the Holy of Holies, if a person would enter Rosh Verubo, it's like his entire body is inside there. Right, so there it's more makel, and the Kodesh Kodesh is more makel. But in other parts of the Beit Hamikdash, where there's Kodshim Kalim, it says because Rosh Verubo Kilu, it's like he didn't do anything. Just, you have to have the entire body inside. And why is this? So Rashi quotes this is because it says in the pasuk bevo'am when they come inside, right? So when you're coming inside, right, with the gomedi azara, it says ya'amod, you have to stand. So standing means all of you, but bevo'am means only when you're coming. So while you're still entering, the din of entering works even with the majority. But when it says that you have to stand in the base of Mikdash, which is a more outer area, then you have to stand completely. That's the way that Rashi explains it. And then the Gemara start asking questions. What happens if you're inside, but some of your leg is outside, right? And it brings, in the pasuk, it says the word the havi'um. The reason why I'm quoting the psukim is because the Tosfos is very interesting. It comes out that he says the whole din is the rabbanon. And in order for it to be the rabbanon, the Ben Ishchai says it must be then that they've made a rule of when you say ruvok kashov and lidyot. So it's up to Chazal to decide when yes and when no. So the Ben Ishchai comes out, I'm not going to go into all of the details, but he basically comes up with a klal. The klal is that the pashtus is that kol b'kol ta'akulo, you should say this rule, because if it's a true rule, if it's an emes, a dikka rule, then it should apply everywhere. So Rosh HaKukulo should work, except where the pasuk tells you otherwise. So when the pasuk says something like Yamdu or Bevoam or Behavium, so then the pasuks tell you usually Rubavikekulo, majority is enough, and then we could say about that film parshas that if only the majority of them is in the bias and some of a minute of it is into the Titura Eliona, it will still be kosher, right? So unless it says otherwise, that's the klal. That's what the Ben Ishchai concludes with. It's a very, very nice piece. It's very long, but very detailed. I haven't told you all of it. And he bases it on Tosfos. The Tosfos, which is in Zvachim Chafa Chavav. Right? So Tosfos says over there, therefore, what he's talking about there in the Gemara in Zvachim, is that the Chachila should be all the way inside, whatever it's talking about. I'm not going to go into it now. But if it's partially outside, and the majority is inside, then it would be b'di'evet. So even Tosfos is saying it's only b'di'evet. It's not saying it's okay, right? The panim me'oris goes back. The halachas would go back what we said before. But in the kodshim kodshim, we talk about the base of mikdash. We say rov kekula lechachila is okay, but in the kodshim kalim lechachila, you should try and have the entire body inside, right? But if not, it's b'di'evet. So he's saying even the din, which you have to have your entire body inside, is still only lechatchila, not b'di'evet. I'm sorry if it's a bit technical. Just want to show you how far we have to go to understand this. So we're saying now, therefore, by tefillin, where it doesn't say anything particularly that it has to be the entire parasha has to be inside, should be okay. Should be okay b'di'evet. Lechatchila, though, it could be, it's a problem. So the Ben Ishchai says, the thing is that although we can now conclude that really it would still be kosher, even if it's b'di'evet kosher, but it would be kosher, he says there's another tonight that we need. And the tonight is, it says, kol ra'u lebila, right, kebila dami. It's like, when we do the korban, we have to sometimes do mixtures. And when you make, in order to finish it off to be completely, the dough, which is for the korban, has to be mixed. And if you don't yet do it, the fact that there's nothing stopping you from doing it, there's nothing left that you have to do, that there's any particular prevention from being able to do. Even if you didn't do that thing yet, it's like you've done it because you could do it if you want to. That's the concept. And the question is, when do we apply this concept? So the Ben Ishchai is over here. If the parshas, like somebody said earlier, what happens is they fell down. But if they could fit in there, and they happened to have fallen down, the fact that you still got Rosh HaKikulo, right, we can apply that principle. And since you could push them back up and there's nothing stopping you, everything's there for it to be okay, it's kibbid, kibbid adami. It's like you've already done it.
But why do I say, why won't you say that even when it's down, it's okay?
Because rubo kekulo, and most of it's inside.
Yeah, but who said it must be all water? If it's down, there is also probably kosher.
So we're saying that the Shlach HaKadosh said you shouldn't do it, and the Ben Shai's grandfather said it was possible. So you know what? Before I carry on, I'm going to tell you halacha lemaisa.
So the bottom, you do it completely stuck to it.
Before I go any further, I'm going to go tell you halacha lemaisa in case we lose the point, right? So the first tshuva that Rav Avadya ever wrote in Yavi Omer is about this, and he said he passed anybody that came to him, and he's usually a very makel posik. He said if the tzilin was the pasha was slightly the tshuva, right? He didn't allow them. He said they're not kosher. He used the word pasul. Yeah, we have to, but we do put something inside. But they have to be able to fit in there in the first place. Well, they don't fit in there in the first place, right? So Rav Avadya, the Kafah Chaim, the Ben Ishchai over here, and his grandfather, and the Zivchei Tzedek, who is his Rebbe, Rav Dalat Samek, these are all poskim, the very important Sfaradi poskim, they all say it's not kosher, right? Even the Ashkenazi poskim, we'll go to them in a second, also is a bit of a machlokes, but no one says it's lechatchila. If the only one that says it's kosher is Rav Ozna, and it's only b'nieved. So you can't get away with this problem. The problem is there. Okay? Now there's a lot of lomdus in understanding. The Bereshchai, I'm going to go through now. So that's the halacha. So the halacha is really every sofer should make sure that the parsha is all the way inside. So if you go and pay a lot of money to really milder parshas, beautiful ksav, everything is wonderful, beautifully looking, and the parsha is not all the way in, you're still going around with b'nei eved tefillin. That's the point that we wanted to say today. So it's worth, you know, following this. So I'm just in a couple of minutes going to run through some of the other lomdus, right? Because it's very interesting to know. So the Ben Ishchai says the first other qualification is it's if it's ra'ui lebila. That means if it could be pushed up and it's not in the way, it would be okay. But if you can't even push it in there because there's no space, it hasn't been routed out, then you've got a problem. Some poskim, the Eretz Tzvi, acholek, and they say, you know what? You could always fold it, right? The Tikkun Tefillin says, no way, you can't fold it, you'll ruin the ksav. There's no such thing as folding it. You can't squash it in there. You're going to ruin the hard work of the sofa. It's not going to work.
Why would it be logical to say, Kolor, in Bina Mankebes?
Yeah.
What's the logic?
That is a principle of Chazal.
It's still not in there.
That is a question you have to ask on that principle, and we can't go in that today. Right? How does that even work? Right? But there are many poskim that say, if you made a pair of tefillin, and so, this is not halacha, right? But the Sefer Mitzvos Katana says that if a person then drops something on it and puzzles it, it was kosher when you did it, so it's okay. It's like tzitzit. If we shrink, they shrink. Not if they get cut, but if they shrink from the original shear, still kosher. Because it was the shear was there when the mitzvah was done. But I'm not going into all the pratim of that right now. But there is such a concept, and it would apply, says the Ben Ishchai. Now, Zichron Eliyahu, who was Rav Dov Morgenstern, still alive today, was Rav Eliyahu's right-hand man in his lifetime, and he's wrote a sefer, very important sefer, Rav Eliyahu Giver, called Zichron Eliyahu, on Batim, when I was a Shiva Bachar, I was close to him. And he also says there, that like the Ben Ishchai, that you can't squash the tefillin in. Say it's not Ra'i Lebila, meaning it doesn't fit in there, it doesn't work. The Tshuva's Minchas Shai, he says that even if it's not Ra'i Lebila, it's kosher. So he's the Mekil. He would say it's okay, even if it's in the Titura Eliona. But we don't paskin like that. And there's enough kamina, because are we saying that Rubo Kekulo means that you've got the shear that's kosher, means you don't need the shear for it to have the entire parsha inside? Or are we saying it's like it's inside even though it's not inside? And there's enough come in lomdus, if you like lomdus, in understanding that. It doesn't make a difference in halakha. But there's two ways to understand that, right? Because the question is, what is the shear of tefillin parshas being inside? Is it a shear that's only rov? Or is it, no, it has to be the entire? And Ruva could tell you, it's like it's in there, and the whole thing is in there.
Is there any argument for saying that if all the ksav is inside, what's sticking out is the border?
Right, so that's one of the things that they rely on, and sometimes when it's really, really difficult, I will measure to see how much of the parchment is left. But on the last line, that nun, although that's chaf sofi, is the problem. So you have to, that bit, at least in the shear of the chaf sofi has to be a kosher shear, even if some of the ink carries on into the titura eliona. But the whole ksav that needs to be kosher is inside. And that would help us a lot. And that would still make it lechatchila. Just one more thing. We've got Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, right, and on the Rambam. And he's got one of his beautiful, you know, brisker Torahs. And he says like this. He says, the only time we say Ruvo Kekulo, right, is no good, is when the mitzvah itself is to bring in the item. So for example, when you're coming into the base of Mikdash or something like that, So then it's different because the mitzvah is to bring it inside. You have to have the entire thing inside, right? So then we'd say it works, right? And you have to have the entire thing inside, right? Sorry, it doesn't work, right? But that's only where the ma'is and mitzvah is lehachnis. And when we were at tefillin, the mitzvah is to do ukshatim, which means to do the hiduk. When we pull it tight, the midah kshira, the mitzvah is the hanacha of the tefillin. There isn't a mitzvah to take every day when we're tefillin, when we don them, to take the parasha and put it inside the bite, and that's the mitzvah. That's not the mitzvah. That's the extra mitzvah to prepare everything so we can have kosher tefillin. When we then got, it's a mitzvah in the chefza that we have to put onto the gavra. But the mitzvah isn't putting the parshas inside. That's not the mitzvah from the Torah. It didn't say the Torah, and you should take parshas and put them inside the bite, and then you've done the mitzvah. Right? So therefore, this whole din of in the entirety having to be absolute doesn't apply, and we can say Rosh HaKikula. That's the Briska Rav. Very interesting, Rav Chaim. There is a couple I'll mention them. So the Avi Nezer, right, says that the Titura Elyona, it says the most extreme view, is Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai, that you have to have it, right? But and he holds it is part of the bite. So the other way around, so it becomes a very lenient view. Because he says the Titura Elyona is part of the bite, which is mashma, that even in these tefillin, when you added it on afterwards, once it's part of the bite, even if it's glued or stitched or whatever, the way we can understand him is a great leniency, it would still be kosher. And Rav Vosna quotes it. He also quotes other Rishonim, why he would say that there's enough grounds to be makil b'di'evit. Okay? Then the Eretz, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, and the Eretz Tzvi, on the other hand, completely opposite. That he says, even if the Titura Elyona has got a din of tefillin, like the Avnei Nezer, he says, however, the Parsha can't be inside the Titura Elyona, even though it's called by, it's called the part of the tefillin themselves. But that's only going to be the fact that it's part of the tefillin, not some external piece that was added on, like a Tosefis. It's part of the bias. It's got a din, it's got shame bias on it. But the shame bias that it has is not enough when you're talking about putting the parasha in the bite. It has to be in the actual bite itself and not in the Tosefis of the bite. So that then becomes a chumrah for us, and we have a problem, we go back to having a problem. Rav Ozer then has this incredible, genius way of looking at the batim, and he says that in the Tefillin Shel Rosh, the Gemara is not interested. You know, in the Tefillin Shel Rosh, there's four batim. It's one piece of oil which has to be. Mechapel, you have to bend it, you have to fold it, that's what we're looking for, into four separate compartments. So he says, is it that each one is a bite and in each one of them the parsha has to go inside? Or is the pshat, the Gemara is telling us, that you need three walls between the four bites. And as long as you've got three walls, as long as the walls carry on down into the titura, they'll be separating each parsha from the other, so that then even inside the titura will still be called four separate sections. And he holds that's what he holds, the ma'aseh of the halacha. So in a situation we have good tefillin like these, and the walls and the shel rosh go all the way down, it could be that even in the Titura Elyona it will still be called that it's a kosher place to have the parshas. But that will only work in the tefillin shel rosh. Now the tefillin shel yad, on the other hand, you don't need a separation between different batim because there is only one bite. So we've got another reason to be lenient. Based on all of this, he's lenient, but only b'di'evit. So, right, so now a couple more halacha l'mayse. So it comes out from all of this that we said, that for Sfardim, based on the Eretz Tzvi that we quoted, Zivchei Tzedek, Rav Brachot, the Ben Ishchai, the Kol Yaakov, who was the Kafa Chaim, Yavi Omer, and even Rav Chaim Knievsky, they all hold, even Rav Chaim holds, in every situation, it has to be entirely inside the bite. It's no good to be in the Titura Elyona. Who are the Matirim? Who are those that are lenient? Rav Vosna, we mentioned, but only b'di'evet. The Chazon Ish says in the Tefillin Shel Yad you can be Mekel, because it's only one bite. But not in the Tefillin Shel Rosh. It didn't hold like what we said by Rav Vosna before, that it's the walls that separated that counts. No, it's not about the walls. It's about the entire bite of the Tefillin, requiring that the Parsha has to be entirely inside it. That's how the Chazon Ish learnt it. So in the Tefillin Yad you can be lenient, but not in the Tefillin Shel Rosh. Otherwise, it's pasul b'di'evet, right? That means meaning it's no, in Tefillin Shel Rosh would be completely no good, and in Tefillin Shel Yad would be b'di'evet. So the difference now in halacha is that when we have a situation, we go to buy batim, we have no clue what's going inside of us. There's only one tiny problem that I'm talking about today. There's so many other problems like this, that when we go to a reputable person that we're trusting, which entirely, right, based on our trust in them, we have no idea what's going on inside. Once you buy a page for them, they're already sold up. You don't know what happened inside. And today, we have a lot of different agents and actors working in the process of tefillin production. We've got the one who makes the bayit, the one who paints it, the one who pulls out the shin, the one who then puts the parshas inside the machnis parshas, and then they sew it up. And there's, at so many stages, we don't really know what's going on inside. Unless we mashgiach from the very beginning, or we buy it from somebody who knows all these things. And so that's what we're working really hard on for the tzibur, is to give you a list so you can go to the sofa. There's a rabbi in Eretz Yisrael called Rabbi Bloy, who's also making a very big noise, and Shaul Klein, they were here recently, just 2 weeks ago in Stamford Hill, and they're writing articles all the time, and all the in magazines, interviews, and putting stuff out, to say when you go to buy mezuzahs, tefillin, you're allowed to ask what's inside. If you go to buy a house, you go and you check it out. You go and buy a car, you bring a mechanic to check it out. You don't just buy it and say, I hope for the best. We have to make sure that we say, okay, I want to know a list of things. Who is the sofer? Where did he learn? Does he have a certificate that's in his current? Yeah? Does he ask shailas? Does he know what he's talking about? Does he even know about this halakha? Do you know how many sofers don't even know? If I tell them this halakha, they wouldn't even know. Because they're only dealing with their job, which is to write the tefillin. Then they rely on the magia to check the writing to see if there's any letters touching, like any negias or anything which is chaser. And the magid may have no contact with the sofa. He just takes it, checks it, gives it back, and then it gets sold. The sofa comes and starts selling it, and they pass it on from a shop to another agent. We don't know what we're buying. We're clueless, really, what's going on inside, unless we know for sure. So to conclude this particular halacha, just leave a minute for questions, we should really be very careful to make sure, right, when we're buying our tefillin, that we know, in this particular halacha, that the parashas are inside the bayit. So now when I go to Abba from Batim Yerushalayim, based Tefillin Yerushalmi it's called, and he makes sure that this shoryal, if you notice, is not square. It's slightly higher, going upwards, than across. There are those who hold it should be as square as possible, but it's really a hiddur which is, it's mamash hiddur yitera. You don't need it. It's really not necessary, not mentioned in Sfarim. It's not required. And if you had a tefillin which were higher up, like a tower, than a cross, in terms of height, you don't require your boy over there. And what we'd achieve with that is we have more space to put the parashas in, so that would be much better. So I ask him to make sure there's enough space before I take the batim and bring them to England. So here, under the Lishka, we have to be, we only allow an approved batim to explain how the Lishka works in the last minute.
Well,
actually,
we shouldn't fall down.
There's a matli that goes around, another parchment goes around, so that we can pull it out and put it back in when it has to be checked. And according to Rambam, that's one of the 8 things which are halakha le Moshe Mitzinai anyway. Right? The Rosh disagrees. But this is not how it will look at the end. It will be another parchment that goes around, and it jets out, and then we bend it up in such a way that it's got pressure, so it keeps it up. Yeah? And we said the Torah wasn't given to Malachim. Right? So therefore, right, we don't have to go that far to worry every second. Maybe it fell down. But if we did a good job, then it should stay up there, right? So when we get it checked in 7 years, that'll be good enough.
Go back to Yitzhak's suggestion. Why don't you build up the base so that the parsha cannot drop? Now, why can't you build up the base of the tetura so that you've got a platform, if you like? Yeah, a few layers of leather, whatever it is, or build it up from the base, I don't know, so that the tetura is higher, and therefore the bayit...
So some do. There are batim makers who work on that. They do that. They have a piece that goes inside there to keep it up.
Yeah.
And that would be acceptable. That's a good thing. But generally, they don't fall, because we also, when they go inside, on the side in between the parsha and the bayit, we also squash in there parchment, so it's just the right amount of pressure that it shouldn't fall out. Right? So there's a lot that, again, the person who's a mumche in this would know what to do to make sure that didn't happen. But if somebody comes along as an amateur and tries to say, just puts them in, so I put them in, it's kosher, it's in the right place. Tomorrow it might fall down. So I'll leave you with that for today. And just wanted to say the Lishka that we've put together, the Rabbanim don't hold that are for no profit. We're doing this to just to train Sofrim of a credible standard that for London. We're not looking to make it extra machmir. We're not looking in any way to make it overpriced. We're trying to make it affordable as we can. But it will take time till we have enough Sofrim and Bale Magia who understand these halachas and are able to provide for the tibur, tefillin mitzvah, the highest standard and of the least amount of money. Shkoyach.
Shkoyach, very nice.
I've got here some magnets here with some of the information about the Lishka. If anybody wants some fridge magnets, you're welcome to take them so you can be in touch with us.
How are you?
Hashem, nice to see you.
Can you
transfer?
Yes.